He was making my dad's plate as he critiqued his only son's failing in life. When he and I would raise our voices, she would just keep moving and serving the table. Cale accepted mashed potatoes from her, and I watched him as she scooted carrots onto his plate. Would you like some ham? Or are you a vegetarian, vegan? Everyone is something these days. Estelle winked at Cale. She was laughing at her own lame joke, and he sort of smiled at her to be polite. There was no way he actually found her charming. Not that she wasn't charming. She was. Very. She was exactly what my dad required in a wife. Someone who could ignore everything except his needs. Someone who never broke her rule. Someone the exact opposite of my mom. My mom was a hurricane, and Estelle wasn't even a drizzle. Actually, Estelle might be the umbrella in this scenario. The glaze is a family recipe. Here, take some of this. She held up a gravy boat full of dark, syrupy liquid. When she bought the thing off eBay, she told me it was from a real plantation, like that wasn't a gross thing to say, let alone buy. I was thankful she didn't repeat that story with Cale sitting here. And a family recipe? Come to think about it, I didn't know a thing about her family.
Karina's always boycotting something. Whatever documentary on Netflix she watches, she'll buy right into what they're selling.
My dad was clearly doubling down.
She goes vegan for a month and changes her mind again with the next one. Wants to save the whales. Hasn't let me plan our annual SeaWorld trip in years.
Wow, how awful of me to care about the world.
I care about the world,
my dad said.
But I show it in a get-it-done, productive way.
I really didn't want to get into a global-scale argument with my dad in front of Cale or Estelle, or under any circumstances, really. Are you eating meat right now? Estelle whispered to me, but everyone could hear her. Her voice was soft, with a condescending drip. I nodded. My face was on fire with embarrassment. Why do they both do this? Being here always made me feel like everything about me was inherently wrong, like I was endlessly failing. Was it them or was it me? That was the question I was constantly trying to answer. The post-parents' divorce therapy question. Was my dad doing something damaging to me, or was this my own reaction to the way I felt about him? My dad chomped on his food loudly, opened another beer. Nope. It was definitely him, not me. Right now, at least. I didn't even like when he drank. He was always on my mom's case about drinking, and the moment she moved out, he started having beer with dinner. Every evening. Cale quietly thanked Estelle for helping him make his plate. I was starting to think he was enjoying himself. Either that or his manners were impeccable. I wasn't sure which was worse. I'm not that hungry, I told Estelle when she passed me the gravy boat. My stomach gurgled, proving me a liar.
Don't be a child,
my dad chided, then smiled at me in a sorry attempt to soften his words.
I'm sure it's cold by now, but you should still eat.
And there it was. I was surprised he hadn't mentioned my late arrival 10 times already. I'm not being a child. I'm just not that hungry. I had a long day. Part of the reason I was late. I hated bickering like this, but my father brought out the worst in me. Especially when the subject was my brother. And now that there was an audience, I felt even more pressure.
You have some growing up to do, clearly, he said, with a sip of beer in his mouth.
God, he pissed me the hell off. I wanted to tell my dad off, to count on my fingers and toes all the ways he was wrong, that he was a horrible father and example. But nothing came out. I just sat there feeling shame. I couldn't even get excited over my brother's arrival because my dad was obviously going to make it a point to knock me down every time I tried to get up.
Both of my kids need to grow up.
My dad looked at Cale, but Cale either didn't notice or didn't care because his eyes were on me. I wonder where we get it from, I snapped under my breath.
Where are you working now?
My dad asked me. Same place as last Tuesday, I said, wishing I hadn't driven so I could have another glass of wine. Cale didn't say anything, but the very, very tiny lift of his top lip told me he liked my response to my dad. Something about Kale being there made me want to show off. I didn't want to come off as a brat or emotionally unstable, but I wanted it to be clear that I could hold my own with this decorated-by-the-army man who happened to be my dad. I wanted Kale to think I was cool, but not trying to be cool. Martin? Or Kale? What should we call you? Estelle, the stage director, asked.
Either is fine.
He was sitting up straight with his back aligned perfectly with the chair. I sat up, correcting my horrible posture. You're in the same company! Estelle read the patches on Kale's uniform. Honey, look, he's in your company! My focus darted to my dad. He was thinking about it, his eyes sort of rolling as he thought through the roster of nameless, faceless soldiers he oversees from his throne.
There are about 200 people in the company.
My dad had the nicest voice when he was talking to Estelle. He was borderline a totally different person. But small hints of annoyance were there behind the smile, despite the soft push of his voice. He was still being condescending to his beloved new wife, just in a nicer way than he would if he were talking to me. Or my mother, for that matter. Oh, of course. Aren't most of your guys deployed right now? Estelle turned her attention back to Kale. She hadn't touched her food since sitting down after serving everyone. He nodded. How did you—
Let's eat,
my dad interrupted. I was glad he stopped her. She was moving beyond polite to nosy at this point.
I'm sure the last thing he wants to talk about is deployment, my dad said.
He scraped his knife against his plate, cutting an already diced carrot. He always did that, and no one ever said anything, even though the noise was ungodly annoying. I could see leftover scratches on my plate, in between the ham and the pile of carrots. All of us, even Estelle, began to eat our dinner in silence. My thoughts went to my brother, hoping he was close by now, and hoping even more that this latest incident would be the one that finally made him grow up. I had a feeling it wouldn't be, though. Chapter 20. Well, that was nice. I'm so glad you came, Estelle said. Hope you had enough to eat. She seemed to be fishing for a compliment as she looked at Kale, who nodded politely. She turned and handed me a Tupperware with pie inside for Elodie. I know it's not cherry, but I think she will still like it. She stood near the front door, awkwardly waiting for me to hug her. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. It depended on my mood. It was more of a half-hug night. Let me know when Austin gets here. I'd stay and wait, but I have work in the morning and Kale needs to get home. My dad waved from his chair in the living room, not caring enough to say a proper goodbye. Kale stood in the doorway, half in, half out. Do you have plans this weekend? We're driving up to Atlanta on Saturday for a few days if you want to, Estelle offered. My dad looked at her pointedly. Kale looked down at his boots. I'll be working. I loved Atlanta, but no way was I going with them. And wouldn't their plans be changing with Austin coming to town? That's too bad. She tucked her dark hair behind her ear. She had shiny, wide earrings on. Maybe next time. Maybe, I said, descending the porch steps. My dad and Kale were both dead silent. It was so nice to meet you, Martin. Drive safe! Estelle smiled as I motioned for him to get off the porch. I wanted to leave, and fast. Once he caught up to me, I practically ran down the driveway and yanked my car door open. I told you those dinners are the worst. Even after suffering through it, Kale didn't have a word to say. Do you have a family? I assumed he wouldn't answer, but anything was better than silence as we drove away, and I began to think about my brother and the trouble he continued to cause. I needed a distraction.
Do I have a family?
He repeated, the words bouncing around in the small space of the car. Muttering, I tried to correct myself. I was starting to feel nervous again. I mean, obviously you have a family, otherwise you wouldn't exist. But are they like that? Three courses, matching plates, all the beer, all that shit?
No,
he said, staring out the windshield of my car.
I don't think many families are like that.
In a good way or a bad way?
Both.
He shrugged, buckling his seatbelt.
It depends if you're looking at the intent or the impact that intention has on other people.
I slowed down to stop at the stop sign. I looked at him when the car was fully halted. Huh? He turned, fixing his eyes on me.
Her intention is to impress you. To please you and your dad. The decorations, the folded napkins, the elaborate meal. She obviously cares not only what your dad thinks, but what you think.
He used his index finger to point at me. Continue, I said, beginning to drive again. I was concentrating on our conversation and slowed down to below the speed limit.
She wants to impress you, to make you see the effort she's putting in.
He took a breath.
To you, it's all performative, and the impact it has on you is, well, it's hell to even be there. So what I'm saying is that intention and impact aren't connecting in the right way, but each of you thinks what you are doing and feeling is right.
Did you read that in a self-help book? I scoffed at how wise he sounded, how maturely he was dissecting my family when I wanted to be a brat and complain about how awful my evil stepmother and father were.
I think I did, actually. But I came up with my own interpretation after almost dying a few times,
he said, and I nearly choked on my breath. Sorry, I began. He held up his hand.
Sorry for what? Why is it your first instinct to say sorry? Did you send me to war? Did you hold my hand while I enlisted? Do you profit millions from sending me off?
I was sort of stunned at the way he was speaking to me. It was like something inside of him had woken up and crawled out to play. There was a harshness laced with truth there, and honestly, I had never really thought about how a soldier felt after coming back from war, especially a young one. I villainized my father for missing half of my life, and I made sure to stay away from other soldiers for the most part. Until now.
Well, did you?
He repeated. I shook my head. I almost apologized again.
I know.
Cale turned his body so he was leaning toward the window, his face out of my eyesight while I drove. As I skipped ahead in my playlist, and Shawn Mendes started again, he reached to take his phone out of his pocket. He didn't do what most people our age did and mindlessly scroll. He checked the screen and put it in the cup holder. He didn't seem bothered the least bit about the uncomfortable silence between us. His disaffection, mixed with the relief that dinner was over, allowed me to start to relax. A few minutes went by, and I found myself softly singing along to the music. I wasn't great at singing and wasn't trying to be. The song ended, and I looked over at Cale, surprised to see that he was already looking at me. I didn't feel the embarrassment that I was expecting. I smiled at him and kept on driving. An old Mariah Carey song that reminded me of my mom trying to hit the high notes came on, and I swiped up on my phone and closed Spotify altogether. We were on the highway now, only about 5 minutes away from my place. I didn't want to ask him if he had anywhere else to go. It felt rude. "You seem to like my stepmom," I half asked, half told him.
"How?"
I thought on it for a second. "I guess just that you were nice. I'm an asshole. I want you to dislike her or at least call her out for being snobby or obnoxiously fake. I think it bothers me that she's the opposite of my mom. She's not fun. My mom was really fun when I was younger. She was spontaneous and would never have made such a fuss around a dinner. And absolutely not on a weekly basis, every fucking Tuesday. Like, who does that?" Cale's expression didn't give me anything in return, but I still felt the urge to keep going. "My mom used to listen to music every time she was in the living room or kitchen, and not on a fancy speaker that plays throughout the house." I looked at him to make sure he was at least paying attention if he wasn't going to speak. He was. I could feel it in the way he was watching me. "She basically had a soundtrack to every moment of her life and would dance around the living room listening to Van Morrison, waving her arms around like a bird or a butterfly. She wore sparkly clothes and shoes and colorful feathers, beads, and sometimes even sticks in her hair." She had soft eyes.
Is she alive?
Kale asked. I was so thankful not to be on the highway anymore. The town's quiet streets were a much better place to handle such a blunt question about my mom. Yeah. I mean, technically. He raised both his brows.
Technically.
I nodded, pulling to a stop at the red light. She isn't around, but she's not dead. Not today. I thought about it. Not that I know of, at least. There it was, my oversharing, which made most people uneasy. I continued to do it even though a really shitty boyfriend I had in high school told me to stop telling people uncomfortable things about myself. He said it was weird, so did my brother, and a few therapists I managed to scare away. But it didn't stop me. I drank in Kale's face as he smiled a little, and I silently rejoiced that finally someone got my dark humor and didn't get uncomfortable. Kale found me funny. I could tell. Maybe he was the only person in the world who didn't think I was weird. My point is that my mom was cool. Effortlessly. She was confident. And so likable. Everyone who met her loved her. She was moldable. Sometimes vibrant, sometimes bland. Sometimes appearing as a brilliant piece of art and sometimes just a blob sitting on a sculptor's table, waiting to be morphed into the next version of herself. She wasn't like Estelle. She didn't have to wear jewelry and heavy makeup and heels around the house. Estelle is like glass. Once she shatters, there won't be anyone there to put her back together but my mom. She was like clay. Until now, I had never thought or spoken about my mom in this way. I usually condemned her for leaving me and didn't really take the time to appreciate who she was, or might still be. I closed my eyes and leaned my head against the headrest of the car. I couldn't think of a single time that I sat in my car without music playing, just talking to another person. The thrum of my engine cutting through the thick Georgia air was all I could hear. That and the whisper of my mom's laughter as she shook her hair. Her hair always tickled my face, and the two of us would laugh until our stomachs hurt. She would stand over me and shake her hair like a wild woman. I loved it. I can't imagine Estelle doing that. Or laughing in general. Not a peep came from Kale. He didn't even move. If I hadn't witnessed him blinking, I'd have wondered if he was okay. He had this thing about him, and I didn't understand it. I kept trying to make him fit into a box. Was he charming, warm, friendly, genuine? He didn't quite fit anywhere, exactly, but he somehow put me at ease. It wasn't a familiar feeling. It was sort of scary how fast I could see myself getting used to this. This must be why people want boyfriends. To have a comfortable, settled feeling all the time. Boyfriends. Friends, what in the world is wrong with me? I kept the conversation focused on my mom. It felt nice to be able to talk about her, and who knew when I would next have this chance? Anyway, my mom. She wasn't materialistic. She didn't care about overpriced purses or flashy earrings. She shopped at thrift stores and made her own jewelry half the time. The fanciest we ever got was for our birthdays. She was obsessed with birthdays, even more than Christmas-level obsessed. She used to go all out for them. It was this huge thing, more like a birthday week. We didn't have a ton of gifts or anything, but she was creative and thoughtful. She would make us pancakes and cut them into the shape of our age. She did it every single year until I was 17. I paused. If you want me to shut up, I will. I laughed nervously, realizing that this guy hadn't given me anything, and I was telling him stuff I had never told anyone. Half of me saw the red flags, and the other half of me ignored them, because it just felt good to be around him. It crossed my mind that I could make up anything I wanted about my mom if I felt like it. I didn't have to tell him the truth about her. I could make her out to be the villain who abandoned her kids, or a sympathetic free spirit who escaped the ties of a life she was forced to live but never wanted. He shifted in his seat and cleared his throat. I stopped talking.
Go on.
There was something too casually cool about him. He was close to the line of arrogant, and I could feel how sure of himself he was. I envied it. The way he knew exactly who he was and didn't have to say it or show it off. His attentive listening made it clear he wasn't a narcissist. I've met enough of them to know. One year she really went to town. The year before, I paused. I wasn't ready to decide which version of my mother I would put in the story I was telling Kale. She'd decorated the whole house in those lights from Spencer's, even a freaking disco ball. Do you remember that store? They had the most absurd t-shirts and penis-shaped everything. He nodded. They had these disco lights, and my mom put them around our living room and kitchen. All of our friends came over. I mean, I only had like 3 friends. Most of the kids came for Austin. We always had a packed house. I had this boyfriend. I think his name was Josh, and he brought me cornbread. That was my birthday gift. I didn't know why I was going into such detail, but I was so lost in my own memories that I just kept going. I never figured out why he brought me cornbread. Maybe his mom had it lying around, or was it a snarky joke about my weight that I didn't get at the time? I don't know. But I remember getting this karaoke machine and thinking it was the coolest present ever, and my mom went into her room and locked the door during the party so we could feel older than we were and not be chaperoned the entire time. Of course, we ended up playing one of those stupid party games, and I had to kiss a boy named Joseph, who actually overdosed on heroin a few months ago. I could feel Kale looking at me, but it was the weirdest thing. I couldn't stop myself from talking. We were at another red light. The sky was pitch black, and the red lights were reflecting off his dark skin. Wow, I'm talking a lot. I clammed up, embarrassed. I couldn't believe I had spiraled into conversation about the drug epidemic and everything. My cheeks flushed. He looked over at me.
It's cool. I like hearing your take on the world.
His voice was so soft. Who was this guy? So patient, so reserved, yet so in touch with the moment. I tried to imagine his friends, the lucky people who actually got to know him. Like Philip, Elodie's husband. Philip was buoyant and friendly, and Kale? Well, I didn't know what the hell to think of him. My brother was the only person I'd had to share reminiscences of my parents with. He had an aversion to reliving our childhood, and he no longer wanted to dwell on that part of our lives. But not me. Well, I lived in the past most of the time. Even so, I'd never had this type of conversation with anyone other than Austin. My take on life? I repeated. You've heard enough about that. What's your life like? The light turned green. I wished it would have stayed red for another minute, another hour, maybe even an entire day. He looked a little perplexed.
There isn't much to say. My life is that of a soldier. I live alone, sleep and wake up alone, go to war with my guys and hope to come back alive.
Now, I was the one who was speechless. So you don't have a girlfriend or anything?
No way.
He immediately shook his head. A boyfriend? I just had to ask. I took him in, his uniform, his young face, his voice that spoke as if he were a generation older than he looked. He shook his head.
Neither. There's no point in dating. I'm a soldier. Why make anyone else suffer while waiting for me to die?
His loaded response kept us both quiet as we turned onto my street. I parked my car in the driveway. The wind whipped around us as I pulled the keys from the ignition. Dirt covered my windshield with each sweep of air. Paving my driveway was rapidly moving up on my to-do list. As we climbed out of my car, his voice surprised me.
Do you date soldiers?
I laughed, grabbing my purse from the back floorboard, and the wind helped me slam the car door. No way. I don't date much. I mean, I could if I wanted to, I just don't have the time, or the energy. But no, I don't date soldiers, ever. Like you said, what's the point if they're always gone and can die at any moment? Kale stared at me, our eyes touching in some odd sort of agreement. He was a soldier who didn't allow intimacy into his life, and I was a messy 20-year-old who hardly knew what intimacy meant, with a promise to never date a soldier. Problem solved.
Not that there was a problem to begin with, but now I knew that I could truly tell this stranger anything, since he would always be that. A stranger. Chapter 21. Elodie was asleep on the couch, her small body sprawled out at awkward angles. I sat my purse down on the floor, kicked my shoes off, and covered her with her favorite blanket. Her grandmother had made it for her when she was a kid. The stitching was really worn now, almost threadbare, but she slept with it every day. Her grandma had passed a few years back. Elodie cried every time she talked about her. I wondered if she missed her family. She was literally across the globe from them, and pregnant, with a husband away at war. She didn't talk much about missing the life she had before becoming an army wife. She didn't mention her parents much, but I got the impression they weren't keen on her running away to the U.S. with a young soldier she'd met on the internet. I couldn't say I blamed them. Elodie moved a little when I turned off the TV. Did you want to watch that? I asked Cale. He was so quiet, I forgot he was even here. I also forgot that he would be sleeping over at my house. He was holding the pie I brought back for Elodie that I had neglected to bring in from the car.
No, it's cool. Where should I put this?
He asked, looking down at his full hands. Oh, this man of many words. I continued. The fridge is fine. He walked through my house, boots off, but full uniform still on. Do you need clothes to sleep in? I asked. We were both in the kitchen now.
I'll get the rest of my stuff tomorrow.
I have some of my brother's clothes here if you need something.
I'm fine. I've slept in this many times.
He pulled at the tan camouflage jacket. Cale and I were only feet apart. His dark eyes were focused on me. I waited, thinking he had something to say, but no words came. Just those eyes reading my face. I was so tired that I barely had the strength to hide it. I felt like crying as he stared at me, though I had no idea why. The kitchen felt so small, and I felt so weak. The pressure of being around my dad and Estelle for hours after a long day at work had worn me out.
You okay?
Cale's voice was soft, just enough to keep me standing upright. I nodded, and my eyes filled with tears. Why? What the hell is wrong with me? The more I tried to stop the tears, the more my eyes filled. I was beyond tired. Tired from working, from the stress of my bills piling up, from everything. I had forgotten that my brother was on his way, and he still hadn't called me. Sorry, I don't know what's wrong with me. I blinked up at the dim ceiling lights. One was out. Of course it was.
What did I tell you about sorry?
He half smiled and lifted his hand into the air between us, hesitantly petting my head. The tears poured over at his gentle affection. He somehow knew that I needed someone to be there, to tell me things would be fine. Wow, I'm sorry. I stopped myself from apologizing again. He's right, I do that a lot. Most of the women I know do. Almost did it again. I smiled, pulling myself through my random meltdown in the center of the kitchen. It was a real smile. I was confused and frustrated and tired, but I wasn't embarrassed. The thought that maybe I should be crossed my mind for only a brief moment. Embarrassment is one of the worst emotions people are forced to feel. I've spent my life trying to avoid it. Abandoning his typical, emotionally unavailable look, Cale offered a smile that was bigger than mine, still a tiny bit awkward, but he held his composure. He had a few different levels of smiles. This one was probably a 6, if I had to guess. I wondered if I would ever get to see his totally unabashed level 10 smile. Would I ever see this man full of happiness with weightless shoulders? I shook my head at myself, forcing the thoughts into quietness. I'm going to go to bed. I had a really long day, and I'm so tired that I'm all over the place. I waved my hands between us, shifting the weight of my body to my left, and moved past him. I purposely avoided eye contact and forced my gaze to follow the straight line ahead of me to my living room. I desperately hoped Elodie wasn't awake and listening to us. She wasn't really the sneaky type, though. She usually led with her opinions and voice.
I admired it. Envied it, even. The night sky washed over my living room where Elodie slept. Her elbow was still bent oddly over her head, and her legs were dangling off the cushion. "Should I wake her, so you don't have to sleep in the chair?" I turned to Kale as he stepped behind me to lock my front door. The deadbolt, too.
"I'm fine with the chair."
He was standing close to Elodie now, staring at her face, her belly, and her face again. Her perfect porcelain skin, even with a small breakout on her forehead, looked incredibly appealing and charming. She's stunning from every angle. I hated that having Kale around made me compare myself to my best friend and feel unusually insecure. I'm not like her, but I don't mind the way I look most days. I think I'm pretty. Mostly. This is what boys did to us. Logically, I knew it was a me thing, not her, but it still felt like shit. Which, in turn, made me feel guilty for thinking anything but loving things about her. Ugh, my head spun around and around. Kale looked at me again, trying to read my face. I always loved meeting people who read and considered others' emotions. I've met only a handful of empathetic people in my entire life, and definitely wasn't expecting that characteristic from a random soldier who's currently couch surfing at my place. "If you're okay, I'm going to bed," I reassured the both of us. He nodded and sat down in the chair. That was his way of backing off. I could feel it. "Do you need a blanket?" I asked from the entrance to the hallway.
"If you have one,"
he said, almost under his breath. I grabbed an old comforter from the closet and quietly brought it to him. He thanked me, and I nodded. I still felt overwhelmed, but Kale's silent watchfulness and the quiet familiarity of my home made it easier to breathe. I crept down the hallway again and stopped at the bathroom to pee and brush my teeth. My routine made me feel like I was accomplishing something. Red flag. I was seeking approval, and according to my last therapist, that was a habit formed from my childhood. This learned behavior then turned up in my relationships, like with my ex-boyfriend, Brian, and is now manifested into mostly keeping myself out of them. I washed my hands and rubbed them with lotion, then spit out my mouthwash. I'd brought a t-shirt and shorts into the bathroom, so I slipped them on and turned the light off. The floor creaked as I walked out. I tried not to look at Kale from the hallway, but I couldn't stop myself. He was awake, his eyes wide when they touched mine. He looked away and closed his eyes as I went into my room, feeling relief as soon as the door shut. I lay in bed and listened to the soundtrack of my house, the fridge kicking on and off loudly, the dull drone of the AC. I listened particularly for Kale to make the smallest of sounds. It occurred to me that I wasn't worried, even for a second, to leave Elodie alone with him in the living room. Trust? An unfamiliar feeling, but a nice one. I tried and tried to quiet my mind as my body began to fall asleep. I felt so restless. I turned over, grabbed a pillow, and put it between my legs, hugging it close. I thought about how it would be really nice to have someone next to me in bed. I like living alone, but there are times like tonight when I can't sleep and just wish I had someone to bare my soul to as the dawn came and quieted us both. Outside of my family and Elodie, it had been almost a year since I had human contact that wasn't work-related. I had never really had that in large or consecutive doses, but Kale was making me feel a bit like I had a crush on him. That little patter of your chest when they look at you. The uncontrollable spells of word vomit. I didn't know Kale well enough to actually have a crush, and I hadn't been around men for so long that I'd forgotten what cute ones can do to our brains. I guess that doesn't really apply to Brian. He was attractive, but it was his charm and the spreadsheets inside his mind that drew me to him. He gave me attention, told me I was hot and smart and should leave this army town and move with him closer to Atlanta. His job as a government contractor was ending soon, and he wanted to be closer to his parents. As if they weren't close enough. His mom knew every time we fought. His dad gave me a worried, fake smile every time I talked about my job. He was my longest relationship, and God, did he make me never want to have another one. He liked other girls way, way too much, and that's what ended us, all three times. I went back twice out of loneliness. Or was it self-pity? I didn't know, but this was the longest I'd gone without going back to him. He was the only boy I'd dated since I moved here, since high school, when I barely dated at all. Making out with senior boys who didn't know my name apart from Austin's sister wasn't exactly dating. Brian's manipulative charm was addictive, and I had hoped that one day he would actually understand me and find me good enough for him and his parents, although that day never came. But now, after these few months, the spell had finally worn off, and he barely crossed my mind anymore. I rolled onto my back, sprawling my legs and arms out. I moved my arms up and down like I was making an angel in the snow. I should be grateful I get to have the whole bed to myself, and I should stop thinking about men in general. Not Cale, not Brian, not my dipshit brother, and especially not my dad. Chapter 22. I woke up with my cell phone on my chest. It felt like the heat was on. I checked the time, almost 4 a.m. I had to be up at 8 so I could run to the grocery store, get gas, and be ready for work by 10. Thinking of my to-do list was stressing me out in the middle of the night, making my brain too awake to go right back to sleep. I rolled my t-shirt up, turned my fan on high, and lay back down, letting the cool air fill the room and brush across my skin. Opening Facebook on my phone, I went to Elodie's friends list and typed in Cale's name. Nothing came up, so I searched for him again. I changed my search to Mikhail Martin and found a profile with fewer than 100 friends, which seemed odd to me, but made sense for what I knew of him so far. I didn't talk to 99% of the people I was friends with, but I still had almost 1,000. That seemed excessive. Having 1,000 people I never spoke to have access to me. His profile picture was a group shot of Cale with 3 other soldiers. They were all dressed in ACUs and standing next to a big tank. Cale was grinning in the picture, maybe even laughing. That's how bright his smile was. It was weird to see him like that, his arm around one of the guys. Maybe this was his level 10 smile that I had been wondering about. I zoomed in on it. My stomach tingled. I went back to his profile, but apart from his profile picture in Fort Benning, Georgia, I couldn't get any information from his page at all. Everything was private. I almost asked to be his friend, but it felt stalkerish to send him a Facebook request while he was sleeping on a chair in my living room. I clicked out of his profile and went onto Instagram to see if he had one, though somehow I knew he didn't. I typed his name in and searched, but nothing came up. I went to Elodie's page like I had on Facebook, and still nothing. So he wasn't an Instagram kind of guy. I liked that. I closed the app and threw my phone to the empty side of the bed and sat up. It was so hot in my room that I was starting to think Elodie might have accidentally turned on the heat instead of the air again. My throat was dry. I could feel sweat on the back of my neck when I tied up my thick, curly hair. Cale and Elodie would both be sleeping in the living room, so I made sure I was quiet when I walked down the hallway and into the kitchen. I knew the floor plan of my house so well, I could easily navigate every inch in the darkness with only a little guidance from the nightlight plugged into the kitchen outlet. I grabbed the jug of water out of the fridge and chugged it until I couldn't anymore, and my throat burned from the cold. Every night when I was a kid, my mom had brought me a cup of ice water to help me sleep. I stopped craving it a few months ago, but still kept a jug in the fridge, just in case the need for that comfort returned. I closed the fridge and almost screamed when I saw Cale sitting at the kitchen table. Shit, you scared me! I wiped my wet lips with the back of my hand. Sorry if I woke you up. It's so hot in here.
I was up.
I took a step closer to him, and it took his eyes raking down my body, down my rolled t-shirt to my stomach and my exposed thighs, to realize I was barely dressed. It was dark in the room, but he could definitely see at least the outline of my body. I pulled my shirt down, attempting to undo the knot I had tied at the hem. Why are you up? Were you just sitting here in the dark? Cale's head tilted just a bit, like he was confused by what I was saying, and he looked down at my legs. I immediately felt a wave of insecurity, thinking about the dips of cellulite peppered across my thighs. He looked back up at my face.
"Can I have some of that water?"
he asked. I flushed, wondering how the hell I hadn't noticed him sitting there as I made my way to my fridge and chugged water out of a plastic gallon jug. I nodded and opened the refrigerator door. It's just tap water. I buy one of these. I held up the jug labeled spring water every once in a while and just refill it with tap water, so it's not actually spring water.
I can handle tap water.
His sarcasm surprised me. I smiled at him, and he smiled back. Also a surprise. He took the container from my hand and lifted it to his mouth without touching his lips. I hadn't been able to see what he was wearing, or not wearing, in this case. He had taken his uniform jacket and tan t-shirt off, and camo pants hung so low on his waist that they revealed briefs I could almost read the label of, but knew I shouldn't try to. I looked back at his face as he took another drink. "So why are you up? Getting used to the time difference?" I asked. He handed back the jug, and I took another swig. I was still hot, but the kitchen was much cooler than my bedroom. The cold tile felt good under my feet. I checked the thermostat just inside the living room, near the hallway. It was set to 70, and it felt like 70 in here. Just not in my room. Was I getting sick? I couldn't afford to. Literally.
"I don't sleep much,"
Kale finally answered. "Ever?"
"Never."
I sat across from him at the dark wood kitchen table. "Because of where you just were?"
"Not your father's house,"
he said with a hint of irony, but with no trace of humor in his face. Not in the strong, straightforward set of his jaw. Not in his cloudy eyes that were bloodshot from not sleeping. "Ha ha." I rolled my eyes, trying to stop my brain from imagining him and Afghanistan.
"War, of course."
His eyes were on his hands now, not my face. He licked his lips, allowing a small laugh to escape.
"I wonder if I'll just be saying that my whole life. You know, like the Vietnam vets I meet at the VA hospital. Still telling stories from 50 years ago."
My stomach started to ache thinking about this quiet young man in a war zone, being woken up by shells or rockets or whatever terror he went through, while I complained and whined to myself over unimportant things and the little miseries of my life. Perspective was a bracing slap across the face.
"I guess it's weird being back here,"
he sighed.
"Like I'm not sure what to do with myself."
Between his honesty and the vulnerability cast across his face, I thought I might be having this conversation in a dream. It was like I could read his mind and feel his pain, even though he was doing a good job trying to conceal it. I was an expert in avoidance and knew emotional masking when I saw it. "Do you have to go back?" I asked, hoping he would say no. In my mind, an alarm was blaring, screeching to warn me, or maybe Kale, of how I was starting to feel about him. I had known him for less than 48 hours, yet I wanted to protect him, to keep him from going back there, to just make sure he didn't get lost, in any of the ways one could. A list ran through my head as we stared at each other for minutes that felt like an hour. Why did I even care? I took his face in, wanting to keep a copy of the way his eyes were steady, not darting all over, his lips were half open, words hesitating to escape. His focus went to the wall behind me. I felt like he was reading my mind, detecting sympathy that might be easily construed as pity. I didn't pity him. I just felt... I couldn't make sense of what exactly I was feeling. When it came to Kale in the army, it was none of my business. He knew what he had signed up for. But that was the logical side of my brain. I knew I felt otherwise. I was lying to myself about the consequence of serving, like signing up made it okay. And that emotion turned my stomach.
"I don't know yet,"
he responded. And we both fell silent. "I hope you don't." The words were out before I could care how they sounded. I hated the idea of Kale at war, so far from here. Hiding in the darkness of sand pits, building makeshift posts only to have them destroyed by rockets in the middle of the night. My entire body got angry when I thought about his life there. So many people's lives lived and lost there. Part of me felt like I was betraying my childhood, my family lineage of soldiers and airmen. But I guess I wasn't as patriotic as I was expected to be. Not if this is what it meant. I had never been, and neither had my mother. You couldn't convince either of us that violence would ever be the solution to anything, no matter what the issue was. Cale's head rested on his bent hand. His eyes were fluttering closed.
I want to stay here,
he whispered, barely coherent. My whole body heaved. This military life was so unfair sometimes. I wanted to ask Cale if he felt like this was his purpose in life, or what made him join the army. Everyone had their reasons, but what were his? Was he like most of the young soldiers I knew? Had he been persuaded to join by the poverty around him and the promise of a steady paycheck and health insurance? I started to say, but his eyes were fully closed. I stared at him in the dark and watched his face relax, feature by feature. His eyes stopped swirling behind his eyelids, and I felt myself drawn to sleep as I watched him unwind before my eyes. I drifted off, not caring that I was away from my bed. Chapter 23. The morning came fast. I had dreamed about my brother, his face bloodied in an alleyway. Our dad calmly talking to a deputy of some sort, myself crying, and Cale was there. We were in another place, a foreign one that I knew I have never seen. It was weird and obviously not realistic, but it stuck in my head as I got ready to leave for the grocery store. Cale was nowhere in sight when I woke up at the table, the sun filling the room. Elodie was still asleep on the couch, lying on her side now and looking much more comfortable than she had before. I skipped showering because I just couldn't deal with the water going in and out today. It was already going to be busy enough. I did my hygiene regimen, including the skincare I'm trying to get a handle on. That's part of growing up, isn't it? I threw on a navy blue dress that Elodie bought me when she went to Atlanta with her group of army wife friends. It was short, but not too short, and had five little fake pearl buttons going down the center of my bust. They were fake buttons, and the dress had pockets. Peak Karina happiness when it comes to fashion in one dress. I'd worn it only once when I tried it on, and now that I was wearing it in my room, my waves took wonderfully to the dry shampoo and were less frizzy than they normally are, and my skin wasn't peeling from over-exfoliating. I looked cute. Pretty, even. Pretty cute? The dress was a little tight around my hips, but not too bad. The skirt was the ideal length. It had thin straps that tied on my shoulders, making it perfectly adjustable. I covered as much of my cleavage as I could, but I also sort of liked the way the top of the dress was shaped, like half an oval, dipping down into the roundness of my chest. The thin cotton was so soft and fell against my hips and flared out at my thighs in little creases, like a cheerleading skirt, but more stylish. I smiled at my reflection, and I wished I could bottle this little moment of love for my body and save it for the next time that I really, really needed it. Like when I order an outfit online, or even worse, try on clothes for an hour at the mall and leave with nothing but resentment for my body and myself. Not today. I didn't feel any resentment as I twirled and pinched my cheeks to see if that viral video actually works. The color doesn't last more than 30 seconds, so I swooshed on a little bit of the blush that Elodie gave me. I hadn't bought my own makeup for months. I had priorities, and makeup couldn't be one of them right now, so I lived through Elodie's hand-me-down nearly-finished makeup. No complaints. She always has great brands. I look at my face one more time, adding a quick layer of mascara and a lip stain. I look pretty rested for a girl who slept at the kitchen table half the night. I usually don't have mornings like this, where I become best friends with my reflection. I should get better at that. At least, I'm trying. When I walked out of my bedroom, I was fastening my sandals around my ankles. The heaviness of the platform made it harder to put on while moving down the hallway, but I managed by leaning against the wall. Kale was in the kitchen, sitting at the table, on his phone. He was dressed in his uniform again. Not shirtless, not jacketless, as he was last night, in the dark, moonlit room with lavish purple shadows bouncing from his chest, his cheeks. The way his face changed as he fell asleep in this little kitchen, and I stared at him until I finally fell asleep there too. I peered into the living room to see that Elodie was still sleeping. I really didn't understand how she slept through everything. That must be so nice. I wish my brain would allow me the liberty of napping, sleeping in, or even just the minimum of sleeping an entire night without waking up more than twice. Kale still hadn't looked up from his phone, and I felt my roaring confidence plummet the more he scrolled. He hadn't yet seen me put an effort into my appearance, and for some reason, I wanted him to notice. I cleared my throat, lightly stomping my heavy sandals against the hard kitchen floor. His eyes darted up, looking at my face first, then my neck, particularly the little beaded necklace there. He looked at it intensely enough to see the K charm dangling from it. It felt as if his eyes were studying each single bead. Then he moved to the straps on my shoulders. My hand moved up to twirl the beads around, letting myself enjoy this moment. My body slowly filled with confidence again as he quickly moved his eyes to my thighs and back to my eyeline. If I was imagining all this, why did his breathing change? It felt primal, like there was a little hint of something he couldn't control. It made me feel high. I wondered who would speak first, or if we would just stare at each other until something broke the tension. Unless I was misreading the moment. I could be inventing this. A flicker of hunger mixed with a look that bordered on desire as he homed in on my face, my lips. He licked his again. My lungs became wild, filled with hornets. My mouth was dry. Kale stood up, and I took a step away from him. I felt the need to protect myself from him, from myself. Not in a dangerous way, just in a this-won't-end-well way. He stared at the space I put between us like it offended him. I took another step back. My hormones were out of control. This is lust. I hadn't felt lust in my 20 years on Earth. I can't decide if I love or hate the feeling, but it's definitely lust. Not a stupid crush. No false expectations of love and forever. Just a physical attraction to a man. That's it. Lust. He finally spoke, pulling me out of the mental rabbit hole I was floating down.
Are you going to the store now?
He didn't look me in the eyes. I felt like he was purposely avoiding eye contact. It pissed me off. But it excited me. Lust, lust, lust. Now I see why it's one of the seven deadly sins. It's so distracting. And random. I nodded while walking past him to open the fridge and drink some water before I went out in the heat. He watched me move around the room, and I chugged straight from my water jug again. What was the point of acting sophisticated in front of him anyway?
Is it cool if I come to the store with you? I don't need much.
Was he inviting himself to hang out with me? Why couldn't I help but smile? I covered my mouth and cursed my dream. The one that played a big part in the way I was feeling around him this morning. Damn my vivid imagination. I nodded again. I couldn't say much to him, and I knew he never really had much to say to me, so we agreed to a quick shopping trip, back by 9:30, so I could change, brush my teeth again, walk to work, and not be late. I was searching quietly for my keys. I thought I put them where I always did, on the table, by the couch. I can't find my keys. I rubbed my forehead. I tried my hardest not to get stressed. The more time I spent looking for the damn keys, the less shopping time I would have.
Oh, shit, sorry. I have them.
Kale pulled them out of his pocket and dangled them in front of his chest. Before I could ask why on earth he had them, he started explaining.
I filled your tank up, and may have driven it to the hardware store down the street since your porch light doesn't work.
I didn't even know what to say. We made our way to the car, and sure enough, as I powered up, my gas meter went straight to the F. Thanks. I struggled to look at him. You didn't have to do that, and I was going to replace my light.
You said you had to work, and I was up early, so I just did it. Not a big deal.
He shrugged. I didn't know if it bothered me. I felt like it should bother me because I didn't even know him, and I definitely didn't need him to pay for my gas or change out the light bulb on my porch. I remembered the way he seemed to be surveilling my yard as we approached the porch last night, him even grabbing the Tupperware full of dessert that I forgot about. He was a soldier, after all, and they just can't help but assess their surroundings at all times. But also maybe, just maybe, he was a person who does kind things for other people. I had never met someone like that. But maybe that's what all this was, and I was way overthinking it, allowing my imagination to get the best of me. Okay. Do you have Venmo for the gas? He laughed sarcastically as I continued our drive to the store.
You aren't paying me back for a tank of gas. You were late to your dinner because of me. I won't take the money, so there's no point in arguing with me.
His tone wasn't combative. It was just certain. Certain enough that I didn't argue it. We continued our drive, through the main gate into the commissary. The tension from last night was gone. I sighed in relief. I was definitely just tired and borderline losing it. Today was a new day, a new Kale, and a new me. I parked, and he led the way to the entry door. The sun was so bright, I had to cover my eyes. When will you get your clothes back? I asked him as we entered the crowded store.
Not sure. I can't get a hold of anyone.
I wondered what that meant. Who couldn't he get a hold of? And why were they keeping his stuff from him? A scorned ex, maybe? The thought irritated me. The cart we had chosen had a creaky wheel that got stuck on every turn. I'd handed Kale my grocery list in the parking lot, assigning him to hold on to it. I looked at him, pressing him to say more. Should we go back there again? To find your keys? Maybe they're in the parking lot, it was dark.
We don't need to go back there. I'll figure it out.
Shit. Okay. Don't you need a ride to get them?
No, I don't.
I felt like we were suddenly in an argument in the cereal aisle, but I'd missed what we were fighting over. He grabbed a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch and placed it in the cart. At least he had good taste in cereal. He was keeping his groceries in the seat at the front of the cart, where kids usually sat while parents tried to keep them entertained and cooperative. I ignored his rejection and kept shopping. We needed only a few things, and I was ready for our little trip to finish, since he was clearly in a bad mood. I really didn't react well to people shutting down. It's made me paranoid since I was young, made my mind spiral. I knew I needed to say something before my mind fully went there. I stopped walking for a second, and he halted too. He looked confused now, but I was getting better at reading him. Granted, it had been only 2 days, but still, I was cracking him open, slowly but surely. If I said something that bothered you or did something...
Huh?
He cocked his head to the side and studied my face, the cart, our surroundings.
What makes you say that?
He asked. There were people walking by, looking at us as we stood right in the center of the aisle. An older white man passed us, keeping his eyes on Kale and me just a beat too long. I noticed his lingering stare shifting back and forth between us, and the hairs on my neck prickled. The man disappeared around the corner. I almost mentioned it to Kale, but I started wondering if I was just paranoid, and decided not to give the rude man any more attention than I already had. I don't know. I just feel like you're... I tried to explain myself. I hated that I was so easily at a loss for words sometimes. He wrapped his hands around the handle on the cart and took over pushing it.
If something was wrong, I'd say it. I'm just in my own head.
His tone wasn't condescending or wrapped in a lie. I appreciated the honesty. It made me feel like I understood what he was doing instead of making it all about myself. And maybe, unlike with my family, the silence didn't need to be filled while grocery shopping. Kale looked at the list again and pulled the pen out of the sewn-in holder on his ACU jacket. He marked off 3 items, using a dash next to each one instead of striking them out, the way I always did. I found the tiniest things about him fascinating, and my thoughts began to form themselves into a little cloud that turned into a daydream. I used the silence between us as we browsed the aisles to think about how different we were, why my brother hadn't called me, and what I needed to do before I could leave for work. The commissary was crowded as always, but I felt less stressed over the crowd and more at ease than I had been since we'd left the house. Kale still hadn't spoken as he put 3 boxes of granola bars into his part of the cart. I have some...
Not anymore.
He rubbed the back of his neck with his hand. You hate my granola bars? He laughed. If I hadn't turned around, I would have missed it.
Mostly, he replied, smiling a little.
Kale stayed in his own head for the rest of the grocery shopping, and he found everything on my list before we got in line behind 3 extra stuffed carts. The low prices on groceries with 0 tax were worth braving the crowd. So many people, I said to him as we waited. Kale nodded, looking over at me. His elbows were leaning on the cart.
So many people giving their money right back to the government,
he said, nodding at all the people in uniforms and their spouses. You're always complaining. I heard the voice before I saw her approach. It was a soft, feminine voice, to match an equally beautiful face. Martin, never thought I'd see you at the commissary. What the hell are you doing here? She laughed, knocking his arm gently. She was wearing ACUs that matched his. Turner was written on her name patch. She was below him in rank. I could tell by the difference in the patches on their chests.
Just getting some actual food, he responded to her.
She smiled at him in a way that made me feel like I was intruding on them. Her teeth were so straight, I could tell she'd had braces in her past, and her dark brown eyes had thick, maybe fake eyelashes sprouting out of them. They were so pretty and delicately placed that it didn't matter if they were real or not. The color of her hair matched them perfectly. Her boots were scotch clean and she wasn't wearing a bit of makeup. I wished I didn't feel so instantly threatened by the presence of another woman. I was feeling a little more sure of myself this morning, but I was sort of distracted by her beauty as they briefly caught up. I was hardly on her level or Kale's, and I knew they were probably aware of that. They were sure of themselves, enlisted into an organized, structured career, and both immediately charming. I felt awkward and embarrassed by my thoughts. When did you get here? I heard you were sent back but didn't know it already happened. Where are you staying? He sighed.
With a friend.
The girl looked at me, smiling still. Turner, and you're... she asked me, reaching out her hand. It felt so formal to handshake in the line at the grocery store, but there I was, unsure what to do with my body and my mouth.
This is Karina. She's Philip's wife's friend.
Kale answered for me, gently pressing her hand down between us so I didn't have to shake it. Her chin pointed up. Oh, the French girl. I couldn't read her. I couldn't tell if she was being judgmental of my friend or if she was merely stating a fact. She was a blank sheet of paper that I couldn't read a word from.
Yeah.
He spoke for me again. I felt like hiding behind him. I wasn't usually so easily intimidated, and I tried to reclaim how I felt when I looked in the mirror this morning. That confidence had evaporated, and I was collapsing in on myself as the noise around us continued to escalate. Turner stood there for a few seconds, waiting for one of us to talk. I knew she couldn't care less if I spoke. She wanted to talk to Kale. Well, see you? I'll call you later. Does everyone else know you're back? She asked, leaning toward him.